The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Broads, this episode is brought to you by Air Doctor. Unfortunately for everyone, cold and flu season is in full effect. And if you want to make sure you and your family stay healthy this year, you've got to get an Air Doctor.
Air Doctor makes professional quality air filters that remove both particles and gases with their medical grade Ultra HEPA filters that are proven to remove 99.9% of bacteria and virus particles in the air.
I feel so much safer indoors now that we have an Air Doctor. The last thing anyone wants is to be sick, especially around the holidays. So let Air Doctor keep you safe this winter.
Air Doctor comes with a no questions asked 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you don't love it, just ask for a refund. Go to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code Chatty, and you'll receive up to $300 off. That's right, up to $300 off. But only if you go to Air Doctor Pro and use promo code Chatty.
And welcome to another episode of Chatty Broads with Becca and Jess.
Well, hello, Broads.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm super excited because we have a guest back that I think might be one of the top guests that we get regular DMs about still to this day, even though the last time we recorded.
Was this like 200 episodes ago or something?
Yes, it was a long time ago. And this episode, Sexually Liberated with Evion Whitney, is one of the faves that we still get regular messages about. And we finally have Evion back in the studio.
Yay. I'm so happy to be here.
So excited you're here with us.
Yeah, I get DMs about that episode too.
It was one of our earlier episodes, and this was like all very pre-pandemic.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
Yes.
I hadn't moved to LA yet.
No, not yet. In fact, I think I moved
during the pandemic or right before the pandemic happened.
Oh my God.
I moved in February 2020. Yeah.
So you've been neighbors with us for a while.
And we haven't
been able to see each other.
Because of the goddamn pandemic, yeah. But I'm happy to be in this space with you all. It's so good to see you.
I feel like
faces.
A lot has happened since then. A lot so with much. In your life, with your personal identity, all like so many different things.
Yeah, mm-hmm, lots of growth.
Mm-hmm. I would love to kind of hear about what the last couple of years like has been for you.
Oh, man. I mean, where do I start? Well, one of the biggest things is that I moved to LA.
Yes.
That was a massive change for me and something that I really, really wanted to do. And I'm so glad that I did it, come hell or high water. and that's been really nice. It's been really good for my mental health, and it's been really good for my like creativity as well. What else? I came out as non-binary last year. Was it last year? Yeah, it was last year. God, there's so many things that have happened that I'm like having trouble tracking.
Well, and also the time frame is just...
It's bananas.
Yeah.
Like, we're not linear anymore.
No.
There is no time. We're literally not. We're not linear anymore.
And Broads, before we dive into an incredible conversation with Evion, are those holiday movies you're watching putting you in the mood to be romantic or look for a partner? Well, finding that someone just got easier with Match Dating App.
Oh, and check out this fun fact. Match's annual survey found that for the first time in more than a decade, emotional maturity ranks higher than physically attractive on singles' priority lists. In fact, pre-pandemic, being attractive was number one, and now it's all the way down at number eight. So, emotionally mature adults are the new sexy.
Yes, we love to see it. I personally have many friends who have found amazing partners on the Match dating app. So Broads, if you are looking, check it out. Find that person that only uses the word ghost to describe paranormal activity and knows liking mezcal isn't a personality trait. Find them on the Match app.
Are you guys ready for something more? Because if you know what you want and you're not afraid to say it, download Match. And now messaging your top matches is free. So download the Match dating app.
Yeah, you know, I came out as non-binary, which was a really exciting experience for me. And then I also wrote a book.
Yes.
So yeah, pretty much, I think shortly after, maybe it was a year after we had our conversation is when I started to write it.
Well, and I think also, now this is just me being up in your business from following you on Instagram, but didn't you also move to LA as like a conscious shift in your relationship too?
We did, yeah.
With your partner staying in Oregon.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah. So I moved to LA in February, right before the pandemic. Yeah. Happened like weeks before, which I was so happy to have made it before the shutdown because I probably would have gotten stuck in Portland. And yeah, with that decision, me and my partner, Jonathan, decided to spend a year intentionally apart from each other. Mm-hmm. We weren't separated. We were just like, we're in relationship and we want some distance so that we can come back to each other.
So when you say your part, are you talking about geographically apart, or what did that also look like in your relationship? Just...
It meant like physically apart, like we weren't like physically together, like we weren't living together. We had two different apartments, two different like schedules. He was up in Oregon, like on the coast of Oregon, and I was in LA. Mm-hmm. And but we were still like together, like we were still in a relationship, but we were using that time apart to sort of pause, reassess, like, is this a relationship that we want to be in? Mm-hmm. And the answer was yes. Mm-hmm. And also, what are the things that we might need to do in order for us to like be together and continue this like upward motion of connection and intimacy and growth with each other? So we use that time not only just to like focus on ourselves for the first time in, I mean, damn near 15 years, and also as a way to figure out like, okay, what are the parts of this relationship that might need some shifting or changing or recalibrating?
Yeah. What was that like to do that in the middle of, well, the start middle of the pandemic, yeah, sure, which is already so...
I felt like not the intention.
That was like I was clinging to, you know, what I knew.
Yeah.
And I'm sure your intention was like, I'm going to LA.
Literally that.
Friends.
Like, literally that. I was like, I had so many plans. It was going to be my 33rd birthday. I was like, I'm going to spend my Jesus year with all my friends, have a big party. I was so excited. And then, yeah, a couple of weeks after I landed in Los Angeles, everything got shut down. And so Jonathan and I talked about this a lot. You know, we planned for the financial aspect of it. We planned for like, what's going to happen if we miss each other? Mm-hmm. What's going to happen if like a month in, we're like, fuck this, we don't like it anymore. Yeah. So we planned all of that, but we did not plan a global pandemic. No. And so like,
that wasn't in the journal.
It was fucking bananas. I mean, I think if anything, it really just,
clarified.
It clarified and also just like revved up the reason why we were doing what we were doing. It sort of like brought it into focus and also made us, there's another aspect of this where, you know, when we were talking about it, we really wanted to really have time apart. Like, you know, maybe not talk to each other.
I wondered if you had intentional boundaries around communication.
We really wanted to be like, okay, we're going to do it. Let's just jump right in. But you can't fucking do that with a global pandemic when no one knows what's going on. We could be dying tomorrow. Yeah. So we actually talked a lot. Almost every day. And it was mostly to process the grief and the fear and the uncertainty that was coming up around the pandemic. But the one thing that we didn't do was like, we didn't see each other for 5 months. And that wasn't planned. We actually wanted to like have maybe the first month would be like, okay, we're living apart. We're not talking to each other. Like, let's have that boundary and just see what comes up. And then the second month, we'll see each other like twice a month. Right.
Right.
And that did not happen. We didn't see each other for 5 months.
Yeah.
So I was, by the way, I was living alone for the first time.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm like...
In my life, like I've never lived alone ever. And so that was an experience in and of itself to be like, okay, I'm in this apartment by myself. And, you know, the fear and the uncertainty of this fucking global pandemic, it was a lot. It was a lot. And I'm also really proud of myself that I got through it.
Good for you. I was going to say, I'm like, my goodness, like...
Yeah.
Massive props to you for being able... Because I'm like in the midst of all of that.
It was scary. It was scary. And also, it was just like very clarifying. Mm-hmm. Like, I got really clear about who I was, what I needed in my relationship, what I needed in my work. I also feel like a lot of my friendships got weeded out during that time. I think for a lot of us, like the pandemic was like the great reckoning that we sort of needed or didn't really want to have, but we just like needed to have these conversations with family members, community members, ourselves even.
About
our careers. Like, it seems like for me, every single thing got like, it went through this process of like, should we keep it? Should we not? You know? And it was pretty brutal. You know, there are a lot of people and dreams and goals that didn't make it. And I'm really glad that my relationship with Jonathan was one of the ones that made it. And he's living with me now. So we're together.
You know what? And not only did you survive, you were also, I think, able to be an anchor for people too. In fact, I remember it must have been just a couple months in, and I, you know, just on Instagram, and I saw that you were on a live or something, and I clicked on it and watched it, and you were going through some sort of breathing exercise or something like that.
I was doing dance classes, sensual dance meditation.
Yes, and I remember clicking in, and I was like,
such a gift during that time.
I needed it for me. Like, I felt like, what am I going to do in this house all by myself? And also, I could feel from everyone around me that they were just really having a hard time connecting to themselves. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to create spaces where folks could, like, be with their bodies, move their bodies, move some of this tension out while also just like giving themselves some sweetness along the way and some community. I'm glad that you enjoyed that.
Yeah. And I think that's really neat that you were able to share that in the moment, even though you were going through all of this, you know, turmoil, inner and outer turmoil, and then get to share some peace with people. I think that's so cool.
Yeah.
Because I'm just curious for myself. How did you guys get from, you saw each other 5 months?
Yeah.
And then what did that time look like? You said now you're living together again.
Yeah. So we didn't see each other for 5 months. We actually did this year apart this living apart thing for about a year. Mm-hmm. So from February to January, we decided to have him come back a little bit early because we weren't entirely sure what the election was going to look like.
Yeah.
And that felt really important to us just in terms of safety. And I think at that point, we just felt like we were done. We're like, okay, we got everything that we needed out of this experience. There's nothing more that we want from it. We really were fucking missing each other. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to sort of integrate some of the things that I was learning about myself in real life with him, you know? Because, I mean, it's one thing to be in relationship with someone and be like, wow, I'm having all of these, you know, epiphanies. This is how I want to be in this relationship. It's another thing to actually practice it and do the thing. And so I think we both just felt the sense of completion. And it was wild. There was a pretty long period of just like getting used to having somebody in my house. And in my bed, because he moved in with me, we didn't get a new apartment because, like, fuck that. LA housing market is like, I'm like, I am staying here forever. So he moved in with me. And it was so odd because this apartment I picked just for me. Like, I wasn't thinking about him. I wasn't thinking about, like, when we eventually move in together. Yeah. I was completely selfish and chose this apartment, the location, everything for me. And so I was totally set there, but then he moves in and he's like, yeah, there's some things about this that I don't really like. You know, like he was living in the coast of Oregon, so he had like nature all around him. Mm-hmm. Like he goes out his front door and he's like on hiking trails. And I live in an area where it's like busy and there's traffic. Like I'm right off of Sunset. So there's a lot of action. And I love that shit. Like I love it. But he was very much like, wow, it's really loud here. And I'm like, I dig it. But so that was an adjustment. And then also the adjustment of like not being alone. I really surprised myself by how quickly I acclimated to being alone. And I thought that it was going to be hard. Like I thought that I was going to be like, oh, I fucking hate this. I just want to be around people. But I was really luxuriating in that space and in that time. And so when he moved back, I was like, can you go now?
Oh, yeah.
Can you leave again? And he might, you know, we've talked about doing this like experiment or this experiment again, but just not for a year, maybe for like 3 months at the most. Because yeah, a year is pretty long.
That's cool that you guys can do that together, though, that you're with each other where you can be like, let's try this. Let's challenge ourselves. Yeah. Let's improve and dissect and do all that stuff. I was just thinking on a much smaller scale, but it was interesting because I had this conversation on my Instagram with some people. My boyfriend went on a surf trip for a week. So I was with my two kids and it was kind of the same thing where I'm like, oh, this is going to be a little much. Normally he's right there, you know, helping with breakfast, doing the whole routine. I was like, oh man, this is going to all be on my shoulders. And then at the end of the week, I was kind of like, we are in a rhythm, dude. The house has never looked so clean. Yes. I'm on top of my shit. Yeah. We're up in the morning. We're going. We're killing it. And I posted on my Instagram. I was like, do you guys ever get like when your partner's gone and they come back and you're like, what, like you said, what are you doing in my space on a much shorter scale? Yeah. But then I got so many responses from people who were military wives and all this. And they're like, this is a very real thing. And I got a lot of responses from military people being like, I will miss my partner so much, 9 months, a year, whatever. And then the minute they come back, I'm kind of like, there's a period where you sort of have to grieve the loss of your rhythm that you had on your own and recalibrate with a person entering back into your space and your routine, which is hard.
It's wild. You know, one of the things that I was playing around with through this period of separation was like, who am I if I'm not in this relationship? Like, because I've never asked myself that question. And we've been together since I was 19. So every part of my life has been centered around him and our relationship and the memories that we've made together. And it was really interesting to contemplate that question while we were apart. But now I'm sort of thinking about that question when we're together as well. Like, is it possible for me to hold the image of myself and also hold the intention of my sovereignty while I'm in relationship with someone? Because I think sometimes we think that relationships, it's just like by design, you lose yourself in them, you know? And I think that that can happen. I think a level of enmeshment happens in relationships that you're in for a long time. But I am trying to like hold both in each hand to be like, yes, I am a wife and also I'm my own person. Like, how can I create the space for me to still be who I am and to have that space and autonomy and agency while also celebrating the parts of my relationship? And like, I haven't really quite figured out the answer to that question, but I'm sort of like playing around with that and wanting to see what's possible.
It takes more work, doesn't it? When you're coupled with someone to stay connected to yourself, it just takes a lot more intentionality because I think it's really distracting to have another person accessible to you to chat, to watch TV with at night when normally instead you'd be doing your little bath and journal and you know, all of that whole routine.
I've been going through, I would say the past like a year has been like a massive push and pull for my husband and I because similar story with like you both, because we've been together since we were like 18, 19.
Oh, and you get it.
And I get the piece of like, I love this person so much and I want to be with this person, but I'm also, and then coming from like religious trauma, right? Being like, I also feel like I missed this very large developmentally, like this developmental part of myself. That I see a lot of people I know that they had it when they were in maybe their 20s, that I was partnered with somebody and didn't have that growth curve alone. And what does that look like now in a home where I'm very much in love with this person still, but there's a child and we're married? And how do you maintain that autonomy? And I'm also like a little bit of a hermit crab. Like, I like to be alone a lot. I love my my time by myself. I know my mom was mom and my dad got divorced many years ago now, and my mom was single for a really long time, and probably about a year and a half, 2 years ago, she started dating this guy who they love each other, she adores him, but she told me the other day, she's like, I will never have someone live in my home with me. Like, she's like, I would love to be his partner until the day I die, but I need my, I know that now about myself, that like when he's over for a couple days, it's great, but this is my space and I'm my best when I'm alone.
And the master of your domain too.
And that's what works for her.
I think it would work for a lot of people if they just took the time to ask, you know? I think we sometimes think that your relationship, your marriage has to look one specific way. And I think through this experiment that me and my partner did, we realized that like there are many different ways to be in relationships. And just because you are living apart, because that's the other thing. When I told people that we were living apart, people were like, oh, so you're getting a divorce?
Yeah, so sorry.
You know? Talking to my mom about this was a trip because was like, oh my God, so you guys are separating, this which means over. That you guys, it's over. And I had to have multiple conversations with her to tell her, like, I swear to God, there's nothing that you don't know. Like, we are still very much in love. Do you ever feel like you're not as free in your relationship that you want to be? And I posed that question to her and, you know, she's a pastor and she's been with her husband for 10 years now. And she was like, yeah, sometimes, but, you know, marriage is about staying together. You don't leave in your marriage. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to be able to convince you of this.
Yeah.
But I think after she saw that, like, you know, we were still in contact and Jonathan eventually moved back with me, she's like, okay, it's just my daughter being weird. Because, yeah, for her, it was such a mind fuck.
Okay, broads, quick pause here. This time of year, it's easy to get stressed out and spend all that money ordering in all the meals because taking the time to grocery shop and prepare a meal feels just too overwhelming. Well, thanks to Green Chef, a fresh home-cooked meal that is quickly prepared is always just moments away anytime I need it.
Green Chef is the world's first organic meal kit that makes eating well easy with plans to fit every lifestyle. If you're keto, paleo, vegan, vegetarian, gluten-free, or you're just looking to eat more balanced meals, Green Chef offers recipes to suit your preferences. And each week, you'll get to choose from over 35 amazing meal options. And once you've decided what you want, Green Chef delivers pre-portioned, partially prepared ingredients right to your door. Eating healthy has really never been more convenient or easy. And I love doing it with Ruth. It's so much fun and it's so easy because everything's already all chopped up, ready to go, all that.
Cooking with Green Chef has saved me so much time. I can walk in the door at 7 and have dinner on the table by 7:30. I never would have thought that was possible ever. You may have heard us talking about our other favorite meal kit, HelloFresh. So let's just clarify. Green Chef is actually owned by HelloFresh. And I personally like to switch between the two because it gives me an even wider array of amazing meals to choose from. My favorite Green Chef meal right now has to be their creamy pesto bowl. It is so good and it's a perfect cozy meal and it's ready in just 30 minutes.
Go to greenchef.com/chatty10 and use code chatty10 to get 10 free meals, including free shipping. That's greenchef.com/chatty10 and use code chatty10 to get 10 free meals, including free shipping.
Broads, if you have some last-minute holiday shopping to do, or better yet, if you need to find that perfect gift for yourself, yes, look no further than Mejuri, the company making fine jewelry for every day. Mejuri is making the most amazing pieces at a reasonable and transparent price that can be worn every day in every way.
I mean, that's really what Mejuri is all about. They create the ultimate staple pieces. You never have to take them off, from a three-piece suit to a sweatsuit. Mejuri's fine jewelry goes with everything. Take my word for it. I wear my pieces all the time. And every Monday, check out their site for new limited edition drops. But if you're looking for those true classics, that's where Mejuri really shines. They've got 14 karat solid gold staples, plus sterling silver pieces. They've even got pieces with freshwater pearls and ethically sourced diamonds. Okay, and all of the materials at Mejuri are fairly priced, handcrafted, ethically sourced, and made to last.
And I mean really made to last, like really made to last. I am the absolute worst at remembering to take off jewelry before showering or working out. And here's the thing, my Mejuri pieces still look brand freaking new, even after months and months of wear. Also, when you shop at Mejuri, you're going to get pieces that are priced affordably without the 10 times retail markup that you usually find on fine jewelry. I mean, who doesn't like a little sparkle in their Christmas stocking, right? And Mejuri has amazing pieces for everyone on your list this year.
Head to Mejuri.com/chatty for 10% off your first order. That's Mejuri.com/chatty for 10% off your first order. Mejuri.com/chatty.
But yeah, it is. I mean, it really is such a paradigm shift to think about relationships in ways where I think that, at least for me, I've thought that if you want some time apart from your partner, it means that there's something wrong, that there's an issue that's, yes, that's going on. And maybe that's true. Like, I think that that can be true for some people. But I think it's okay to have moments or periods of time where you're like, I just want to be alone because I, mm-hmm, miss being with myself, or, mm-hmm, I miss having access to parts of myself that I don't get access to because I'm in a relationship, yeah, that has me caretaking and, yeah, like looking outside of myself. And that was one of the biggest things that came up for me when we were doing this period of being apart, was that like, I am like a chronic caretaker and I'm also very codependent. And so, mm-hmm, it really confronted me with the ways that like, yes, I'm in love with this person, but also there are ways that I'm in relationship with you that are really toxic. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to perpetuate the same models of behavior that I watched my parents go through or you watched your parents go through. Like, how can we be in relationship with each other that is really intentional and healthy without losing ourselves and losing our identities? Like, how can we be interdependent instead of codependent? Mm-hmm. And again, there's not a lot of models for this, you know? No. I mean, my models of marriage were codependency, the wife is subservient, like, you are sort of like a sexual object for, yeah, your husband. Like, there wasn't a lot of autonomy or choice even. So I'm going to toot my own horn. I'm really proud of myself.
Yes.
And proud of the relationship that I've built, so that like me and my partner are allowed to be where we are. And it's not like he doesn't love me. It's like, no, he's his own person. He's having a moment. Let him have a moment. Like, mm-hmm, I don't need to hover over him, you know?
You, yeah, know what I struggle with? I was just talking to a friend on the phone with the other day. I was talking to a friend. I said, where is the line between becoming independent and autonomous and, you know, the number one thing I always hear people say when they get divorced or something is, oh, we just drifted apart. Mm. I was telling my friend, I'm like, how do you know what, like, where sometimes I have fear of what if we become so independent and autonomous that we, yeah, like drift apart? How do you create intentional space for connection? Actually, that's the answer. You create intentional space for connection while maintaining autonomous, independent lives. But that's so much easier said than done.
Totally.
You know?
Totally.
And, but, you know, it's just interesting.
But yeah. I would imagine, like, if you are, like, consciously, you know, making sure that there is that connection there while separating or whatever, I would imagine if you do drift apart, that then might be your answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also want to just hold space for, like, drifting apart doesn't have to mean that, like, we are disconnecting from, true, each other. Mm. It might mean that, like, one of us is growing faster than the other, true, or, yeah, like, transforming in a way, and we need to ask our partner to, like, hey, show up a little bit more, or, mm-hmm, like, come with me on this journey. I think a lot of us, like,
true.
feel that, like, drifting apart means, like, oh, there's nothing I can do because we're drifting apart and we're just, like, out to sea. And, you know, but we have resources. And if we really are committed to the relationship or committed to being in partnership with someone, we'll do the work that we need to do in order to, like, check in. How can we get on each other's level? Is it possible for you to get on my level? And does that have to mean that we're in a space where we have to end the relationship? Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily have to.
We can also be very impatient people, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, maybe it's going to take 2 or 3 years for that person to catch up to you. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not right and the relationship needs to end. Or maybe we need to settle into the discomfort of feeling a little off, a little misaligned for a couple years until that person can, yeah, do whatever growth or whatever is necessary.
Yeah, everybody grows and heals on their own time, you, mm-hmm, know? But I want to encourage people to think about, like, I know for me, I got really identified with being a wife and being a partner to this person, you know? And so the biggest question that has, like, just blown that open for me is, like, okay, I am a wife, yes, but who am I if I weren't in this relationship? How differently would I be moving through the world? Would I still live in the same area? Would I still have the same friends? Would I have the same hobbies? Would I eat the same dinners? Like, these were all things that I was thinking about while we were together or while we were apart. And it was really interesting because there was overlap. Like, I could see, like, yeah, actually, I am kind of similar in some ways. And then there were things where it's like, no, I want to eat pasta every night. Like, yeah. And like the real pasta, not the gluten-free pasta. You know what I mean? And like,
you want the real shit, okay?
Yeah, like, yeah. And I mean, ultimately, gluten-free pasta is better for me. But yeah, I want to encourage people to just think about those things and to not be afraid of what comes through in terms of the answer. Just like use that as information.
Yeah. Yeah, sitting in that discomfort. I know like my husband and I had a conversation recently where we were like really rehashing some past, like our relationship when we were like just married or like, you know, engaged. And we were having this really uncomfortable conversation that is off of what you're saying, where it's like, would I do these things if I wouldn't have been with you? Would I have moved here? Would these have been my friends? Would this have been my career?
Yes.
And we had this very like sit in the muck, painful conversation where like we both were like, oh my God, in a place where I didn't know what I wanted, I pushed my desires on you and I didn't allow you to have space to have your own choices. And I forced this to be both of us instead of allowing you to continue to have your autonomy. And like being able to then sit with that and being like, I did do that and he did do that. And, you know, we did it to each other in different ways and being like, okay, this is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But like the fact of the matter is like, you know, there would have been a lot of things that we would have changed about our path, and that's okay. Here we are now, but making sure that moving forward, that doesn't get convoluted again.
I think, you know, those small choices too that you're talking about are really interesting to think about. Like you said, like the food or like the whatever. And I, now that you say that, I'm sort of recognizing that I've been exploring some of that in our relationship where it's just simple choices like, oh, I have defaulted in relationships to, okay, you are going to watch a movie and veg out on the couch. I was wanting to go, you know, spend some intentional time to myself. But now that you're watching the movie, I'll just sit on the couch and watch the movie, you know? Or like, you're getting Uber Eats and I don't really feel like having like French fries at 11 p.m. But like, you're doing it all, you know, I'm going to eat it too.
Yes.
And instead, consciously, which for me has been a big deal, consciously making the choice of like, I'll go read a book in my room and you can go, you can watch TV and you can order the Uber Eats and like, that's okay. I'm not going to do that just because that's actually, if I'm listening to myself, it's not really what I want to do or what I need right now. Yeah. And that's really big.
It's about checking in with yourself and not going to that default. Like, default is such a beautiful word for this, because like when you're, once you're in a relationship for a long time, you can get into like a slump where you're doing the same things, watching the same television. It's like, and that's not to say that those traditions of comfort are bad, but I think sometimes we can get into those traditions without like really being like, do I want to be in this? Or am I just automatically putting myself here because this is what we do, this is what we eat, you know? And it's okay to be a little selfish and to carve out maybe a day. And like, that's the other thing that I want to say too, is that, you know, it's very easy for me to talk about this because I had an incredible amount of privilege to live apart from my partner for a year. You know, I don't have any kids. My work is remote. I can do it wherever.
Even financially, to be like, we can each support our own household.
Like, yeah. Like the financial aspect of this was like, it was not cheap. You know, I was very lucky that we had a lot of savings that we could pull from with that. And that, you know, I make a decent living with my job. So I don't want it to, I don't want folks to think that they cannot explore aspects of this on their own, like in their own way. Like, even if it means like you take an hour out of one evening a week to just like be by yourself. And that could, you could do anything. You could go for a walk. You can watch your favorite television show that you don't get a chance to. You could take a bath. You could journal. I mean, I think just like having intentional time for ourselves in any case, like whether we're in a relationship or not, is really, really important. But I would say it's even more important when we're in relationships with folks that we've been in for a really long time, you know?
Yeah. You know what all of this is sort of making me think of is sort of this theme of like interruption and like interrupting. I was just even thinking about how COVID was an interruption. So when you were talking about how everyone had to take stock of their careers, of their relationships, of their friendships, of the it's because everything was interrupted and we were no longer just moving through the process of every day and kind of like you're thinking about changing things, but then life keeps tumbling on.
Right.
Instead, it was this big smack interruption, which is, can be really painful, but overall, it makes everyone reevaluate. And I think having those little interruptions in your daily life, I think that's why microdosing is so big right now, too, is because like with mushrooms or with a substance like that, you're normal brain processes and thoughts are getting interrupted and getting mm-hmm. smacked with a different way of doing things, even if it's really subtle, and that can have such a big impact. So I'm just sort of thinking of like, how can we interrupt our just go-to processes with our partners or even in, yes. with ourselves in our own routine and interrupt mm-hmm. that so that we can reevaluate and shift where things need to shift.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes that interruption or that disruption can be very liberating. And at the same time, it can also be very painful, you know? Because yeah. I mean, when we were thinking about doing this, we were really grappling with like, it is very possible that we will spend a year apart and we will say, we don't want to be together anymore.
Yeah.
And I know that that might be another reason for folks to not do it. It certainly was almost a reason for me because I'm like, I would rather, like what we have is so good and I don't want it to threaten that. But ultimately, I was really prepared to have this relationship dissolve if it meant that neither of us were happy at the end of it. Like, I don't want to do anything if it's done in a half-assed way or mm-hmm. if it feels like an obligation. Even if I've been with someone for 15 years, like I've watched a lot of people do that in their relationships, and I have this one fucking life to live. Like, I want it to yeah. be a good one. And I want for everything in my life to make me feel good as much as humanly possible. But yeah, you know, this work is not easy. Like, these questions that you ask are not easy, and it's going to be painful, and grief is going to come up, and you might be, you know, confronted with the fact that this relationship isn't a good relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that has come up after we did a podcast about it together, and people listened to it on my podcast, and they were very much like, I have wanted permission to do this for years, and watching you and Jonathan do it has made me feel like it's possible for me. Mm-hmm. And I even got a message from someone who was like, I have a feeling that my story won't end in the same way as yours. Like, you guys came back together, which is beautiful, but I think that I'm pretty certain that this is going to be yeah. the dissolving of my relationship. And I feel okay with that because mm-hmm. I know that that's what I need, what we both need in order for us to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you know, I'm a fan of this regardless of whether we stay together. I think it's really profound work, and it really is a disruption against mm-hmm. like all of these systems and stories that we've been taught about love and marriage and fidelity and commitment and all of that.
Yeah, narratives of ourself too, of like mm-hmm. who we are and how we relate to people.
That's right.
Another thing that you have talked about was a sort of coming out as being asexual.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
That's right.
And I think this is such a fascinating conversation as someone who is also like a sex educator,
yeah.
someone, and also someone who perceiving from afar. And I think so often we get caught in these comparative traps, especially online.
Yes.
I feel like in the past I have seen you or listened to your podcast, I'm just like, oh, you know, maybe one day I will come into my full sexuality the way this person has,
no.
you know, or like, you know, and you're not supposed to do
sure,
that,
yeah.
but in your head that happens, right?
Yeah.
You're like, oh, this person is so much more sexually abundant, or like, you know, whatever it is, you know,
sure,
you get these narratives.
Yeah, of course.
And then to see that disruption and be like, oh, wait, you know, you can see someone online and see what they do and be like, oh, you know, I bet their sex life looks like this, or mm-hmm. I bet that their personal sexuality or whatever it is, how many orgasms they have, how often they masturbate, whatever. You start creating all these made up, imaginative yes. stories.
Uh-huh.
And then being like, oh, yeah, I actually have no idea what's going on in this person's life and what their story is like. So
yeah.
I'd love to hear you just kind of discuss.
Yeah, that's so real. I mean, I do the same. You know, I look at people's pictures on Instagram and I make up whole entire narratives yep. and stories and scenes of them. And like we literally have no idea who yeah. these people are. And I understand, especially being a sex educator, a sexuality doula. I've been doing this for 11 years. And, you know, folks have perhaps an idea of like who I am and what my sex life looks like, which is really, it's like the first time I'm thinking about that. Like, wow, people are in their homes thinking about the kind of sex that I have.
Yes.
Like, that's
yes.
really yeah. interesting.
Yes, it's weird.
It's really interesting. I would love to know what people think my sex life is like. It's probably a lot.
On Instagram.
Yeah, seriously, it's a lot more boring, I promise you, than it really is. But yeah, coming out as asexual, for me, you know, there's a lot of misunderstanding, a lot of ignorance about what asexuality is. I think even as a sex educator, I have been taught that asexuality means that you do not have sex. You hate having sex. Sex is abhorrent to you and you will never have sex again. And there are people whose experiences of being ace are like that. There are lots of ace folks who are what we call sex repulsed, who just like have no desire to have sex whatsoever. But there are a lot of folks who are on the ace spectrum. You know, asexuality is not this black or white thing as we have seen it to be, which is like you are sexual, which means you have lots of sex and you love it, or you're asexual, which means you hate sex.
Right.
You never have it. The mind fuck for me has been, I read a book during the pandemic, actually. It was called Ace by Angela Chin. Highly recommend this for anyone, even if you do not think that you're ace. It is quite a beautiful interrogation of compulsory sexuality. This idea that every human should be sexual.
That's a phrase, compulsory sexuality.
It comes from, it's sort of a riff off of compulsory heterosexuality. But Angela Chin describes it as, you know, this idea that everyone should be sexual. We automatically assume that everyone is sexual. And if you are not sexual, there's something wrong with you. And you need to take a pill or you need to do yoni steaming or whatever so that you can get your sex life back or your libido back.
Which, by the way, what is that normal that we're measuring being sexual at? What does that mean?
I have no idea. I mean, even in my own work, when I think about myself and the ways that I'm sort of measuring myself to this sexual standard, I'm like, where did that come from?
Right.
Because it's not a person in my head. It's not like I see someone like Beyonce, for instance, and I'm like, okay, I know that that person has sex this amount of times a day.
Right.
I want to have that. It's like, it almost feels as insidious as like religious trauma, you know, like this idea that you need to be a good person by doing this. You need to save your virginity, et cetera.
And then I remember like picking up being at, like at a young age and it just infiltrating my brain, like picking up Cosmos and like different magazines and saying like the average amount of sex that married people have every single week. And then like, this is the average, this is above and this is below. And then I remember being married and like in my first, like my second month into marriage when all of a sudden sex started to like dwindle a little bit from like, the first.
No, I was like, oh my God, I'm like already. And I was panicking and I'm like, I'm a failure of a woman to my husband and all this stuff because I had a number that was getting thrown around all the time.
Yeah. And even as an adult now, as I'm thinking through it, it's like, I don't have a number that I think is right. And I always say like, you know, whatever works for you. But if someone's telling me, me and my partner have sex once a month, my head goes, ooh.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Why is that? Where does that come from?
Right. You know,
because like, these folks could be very happy having their 1 month or one sex a month type of sex because maybe they do it for 7 hours.
All right.
You know, or maybe they do it for 1 hour and they're savoring every moment. Like, why? What is it? What is the story in our heads that we've created that like you have to have this particular number?
Because there's a line there. Like, we all have a line there where you're like, you guys maybe need some help, like in your relationship.
Sure.
This is how often.
I mean, it really depends on like your own personal desires for sex. And I think the one thing that I love about coming to this understanding that I'm ace is that it gives me the flexibility to be nuanced in my sexual identity, that I don't have to be this sexual being all the time who wants sex and desires sex, which that's never been the case for me. And I've had a very hard relationship with my sexuality because I read those same Cosmo articles as well. I don't know if you remember, I don't think they have this anymore, but there was Cosmo Girl. It was like Cosmopolitan for like tweens.
Yes.
And we were being taught about like, you know, how to flirt with a guy. And like sex was very much a part of our world. You know, like it's like it's at the center of every romantic relationship that we have. And what aceness is providing me is like, what if sex wasn't the center of my universe? Like what does that mean for my intimacy? Like what other ways can I access intimacy and connection and physical connection with my partner that doesn't look like penetrative sex and an orgasm, you know? So I have felt really liberated after realizing that I was ace. To be perfectly honest, I have sort of suspected it, you know. I feel that the ways that folks desire sex has never resonated with me. Like this idea of getting horny, like I don't really know what that feels like. Like I know what desire for sex feels like. Like mm-hmm. I know what it feels like in my body to be like, I want to have sex with you because mm-hmm. that would feel really good. Mm-hmm. But being horny, I don't know what that is. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, or like having sexual attraction to someone, I don't really know what that means, you know? And that's one of the reasons why I love this book, Ace, is because she really dissects like what that means in general. Like, a lot of people are walking around thinking that they know what sexual attraction is, but they don't fucking know because right. we're all referencing each other. Right. And one of the things that she talks about in the book is like, you know, I would have conversations with my friends and we would be talking about like, oh, that guy, he's so cute. And for them, maybe that meant like, oh, I'm sexually attracted to them. But for her, it was like, oh, aesthetically, I think I like the way he dresses. Mm-hmm. And so we're using the same words for different things. And so that's one of the things that I realized is whenever I'm accessing my sexuality, folks probably think of it in this particular way, but it actually isn't. It's a lot more nuanced than that. Mm. And it's really difficult to pinpoint because, you know, sex is not something that you, I mean, it is something that you do, but it's also something that you are. And right. so how can you just like sort of qualify or quantify that? It's really difficult.
Right. Especially if you're looking into like, you know, sort of like theory behind like Tantra and things like that. It's like sexuality is not limited to your desire to engage with someone else's genitals or even your own. Right.
Right.
Like it's a energy. It's a life force. I was having a conversation or a mini argument with a friend the other night because he was saying something and he was talking about channeling sexual energy into like doing other things like career stuff and like not jerking off because then he would channel that energy into doing other things or whatever. And I was like, yeah, I think sometimes it would be nice to be asexual because I feel like I would channel more of my energy into other things. And he's like, well, no, like I'm still connected to my sexuality. I'm like, yeah, but asexual people aren't disconnected from their sexuality.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
It just probably, I don't know. The way that I see it is like what I said, like it not necessarily being tied to desire to like do something physical with someone else or with yourself all the time or as much as maybe other people.
Yeah. I mean, the way that we can understand that there are many different types of like everyone is different and they have their own expressions of like happiness or sadness. It's like the same with sexuality. But for whatever reason, we put this standard on ourselves that's like, you, if you are a sexual being, that means that you have sex in this way and you desire in this way and you are horny in this way and you are supposed to have an orgasm in this way. And it's not like that. Like every body, literal body, is different and everybody's experience of sex and how it resonates in their body, if it does at all, is different as well.
Yeah.
And so I like the freedom of aceness because it allows me to be the full spectrum of my sexuality without having to pinpoint it to one larger end of the spectrum. It's mm-hmm. like some days I feel more ace and other days I feel more sexual. And like I'm able to move through that a little bit more mm-hmm. fluidly than if I were to be like, oh, wow, I don't feel like having sex today. That means that I'm just not a sexual person.
Right. Yes. That's actually a phrase that has never quite sat right with me. And now that you're talking about it, I'm really thinking through it. I was listening to a podcast this morning and someone said something about them being like a highly sexual person. And I was like, I know what you're trying to say, but I don't think that that's being said in the right way. Because saying that someone's like very sexual implies that other people are not very sexual. And I do kind of believe that we are all, and I'm probably not saying this right, but I sort of believe that we are all sexual because we are, I don't know, just like the spirit and force that like makes up
sure.
us and
yeah.
makes up passion, all these things that are not just tied to the physical act of sex or masturbation. And so I have trouble with those phrases sometimes of like, I'm not very sexual. I'm very sexual. I'm like, I don't think we're talking about the same thing when we're talking about like being sexual, you know?
It's very binaried, you know,
yes.
like the binary isn't everything, but there's such a binary when it comes to sexuality, you know? And I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of people wanted to identify as ace because they thought it meant that like you just don't have sex ever and you don't have yeah. sexual desire ever. And even when I came out, you know, people were like, so you say that you're asexual, but you still have sex. That means that you're not asexual.
Right.
And I'm like, first of all, that's not how that works. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I'm allowed to identify however the fuck I'm allowed to identify. And also, you don't know very much about ace people because ace people have sex. I mean, not all ace people. We're not a monolith. But, mm-hmm. like, ace people have sex. Ace people enjoy having sex. I am one of those ace people. I like having sex. I enjoy having sex. I just desire it in a different way. Mm-hmm. I don't desire it in the ways that Cosmopolitan or porn has told us yeah. that I'm supposed to desire it or that other people are desiring it. And matter of fact, I believe that there are a lot more people walking around on the ace spectrum than we think. You know, there's a statistic that we hear all the time, which is like 1% of the population is asexual. And I'm like,
no,
maybe if we think about it in this binary term, but I know that there are people, and even after I came out, multiple people came out to me and said, like, yeah, I think that I'm ace too, because your experience of your sexuality sounds very much like mine. And if you say you're ace, then I guess I'm ace too, you know? Mm. So I want to hold space for the nuances and the flexibility yeah. of our sexuality. And maybe someone has those nuances and they don't feel comfortable calling themselves sure. ace. And that's totally fine. You don't have to. But for someone like me, having that identifier has helped me to feel a lot less alone. And it has also just helped to explain in my own brain, like, oh, I'm not broken. I just mm-hmm. desire differently. Right. You know?
And it's so interesting. Okay, Broads, one more quick pause. And you're going to want to listen to what I have to say. Because if you have a list of New Year's resolutions a mile long already, you're going to need some reinforcements because you can't learn how to be a world-class tennis player or a Michelin-quality chef without some help. And that is where Masterclass comes in.
With Masterclass, you can learn from the world's best minds anytime, anywhere, at your own pace. I first watched my dad do Masterclass over COVID. He was like, I'm going to learn some things with my time out. And I was captivated. I had to try it and I love it. You can learn how to play tennis with Serena Williams. You can improve your cooking with Gordon Ramsay. Or you can learn to write songs with Alicia Keys. Casual. With over 100 classes taught by a range of world-class instructors, that thing you've always wanted to do is closer than you think. The lessons are really immersive also, with like cinema quality videos and additional resources offered for each class. Like, they have lesson recaps. They also have supplemental materials. Plus, the whole thing is completely customized to your schedule. You can learn what you want, where you want, and when you want.
There are so many amazing classes on Masterclass. It actually took me a while just to figure out which one to do first. There are so many good ones. But finally, I decided on RuPaul's self-expression class because I'm such a big fan. I also love that I can listen to the classes when I'm driving in audio only mode, or I can watch the videos when I'm winding down for bed at night. Masterclass is always ready to go when my schedule allows for it, and I can't wait to take even more classes in 2022. Finally, all those things I've said I would learn. This is the year. I can feel it.
This holiday, give one annual membership and get one free. Go to masterclass.com/chatty today. That's masterclass.com/chatty. Terms apply.
So this holiday season, I want to give gifts to my loved ones that make them feel special and unique, because they are. And that's why I'm giving them StoryWorth. You've heard us talk about StoryWorth. We are obsessed. StoryWorth is an online service that helps you and your loved ones preserve precious memories and stories for years to come. It's a thoughtful and meaningful gift that connects you to those who matter most.
Oh my gosh, I love StoryWorth. Each week, they email your relative or your friend, your loved one, a thought-provoking question of your choice from their vast pool of possible options. So each unique prompt asks questions you've probably never thought to ask them. Like, they'll ask, what's the bravest thing you've ever done in your life? Or, if you could see into the future, what would you want to find out? Questions like that. Then after 1 year, StoryWorth will compile all of their stories, including photos, into a beautiful keepsake book that you'll be able to share and revisit for generations to come. So cool.
So I'm actually giving StoryWorth to my parents this year, and I'm really excited to see the finished product, because it's true. A lot of these questions I would have never even thought to ask. Like, they're things that I don't actually even know about my own parents. And I also know that the StoryWorth book will be something that I can pass on to my daughter Ember someday. And maybe she'll pass that down eventually too. StoryWorth, it's just the perfect way to keep the memory of your family preserved for generations to come.
And with StoryWorth, I am giving those I love a thoughtful, personal gift from the heart.
and you're preserving their memories and short stories for years to come. It's like an heirloom. And go to storyworth.com/chatty and save $10 on your first purchase. That's storyworth.com/chatty to save $10 on your first purchase.
It's just like you're both talking about the different, there's like, it's the, these binary terms. I know for myself growing up, I struggled because sex for me has always been very not connected to my emotions at all. Like, so I would sit with my girlfriends in high school, and it would just be like, if someone had sex, they'd right away come back and be like, oh my gosh, and I like him, and I'm feeling, and I felt these things, and I've never felt that way with sex. I almost feel more, maybe I'm using the term wrong, but I almost feel more sexually turned on in conversation. And I like having the act of sex when my body wants to feel the act of sex, but I don't have that feeling. So when I was growing up, I'm like, I could very easily go have a one night stand with someone or have sex with someone that I had a crush on, but then not feel more emotionally. And so then I was walking around always feeling like, oh, I'm a slut. Like, because, and I can't express that. I'm sitting here talking to my friends and I can't relate to them at all because I'm like, I don't feel that, but I don't want to share it because then I feel the shame of like, oh, you are able to go do this. And like, and it's never, I've never been able to like know how to frame that. So then hearing you talk about being asexual, like though that's not the term that resonates with me personally, it allowed me to really kind of examine how I feel sexually because I've just always kind of put it in these boxes, in these terms, like you're saying, not very sexual, very sexual. And I'm like, I don't know how I fall, where I fall, but I feel like very much a certain way about it that I don't know how to. Do you know what I'm saying? So being able to look at it from a perspective that's not just this binary has been really powerful for me. Like just in my own home, where I'm able to be like, you feel a certain way about sex. I feel a certain way about sex. It's okay.
Yeah,
if we have different feelings about it.
Yeah. And also, it's like, it's okay if people don't want to have sex. Like, yeah, that's okay. Okay. Like, can we just give people permission to say, like, I don't really want to have sex right now or tomorrow or next month or ever? Like, sex is not the end all be all of connection and physical intimacy.
No, and you know, so sad to me how I and people that I've seen, how I have betrayed my own body so many times.
Yes.
And how I've even just seen it like, again, on the internet where I'm like, holy shit, where I see other influencers doing like confessions and their confessions like this. Oh my God, this one has really stuck with me. I told my husband after I had the baby that I actually had to wait 12 weeks. And I'm like,
That makes me hurt.
You don't have to fucking lie to your husband. Yeah. You can tell your husband the doctor said 6 weeks and you can say, I don't want to have sex.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have sex. And I, again, don't want to have sex. And I don't want to have sex. You could say that for the rest of your life.
Yes.
And there was another girl I had who wrote in a question. She was like, when will I start enjoying sex? And I was like, when you stop saying yes to sex that you're not enjoying. That doesn't mean that you're going to start having pleasurable sex. I'm saying stop saying yes to sex that you're not enjoying.
Yes.
Stop. You're hurting yourself.
Yeah.
You're hurting your body. You're traumatizing your body every time you do that.
Stop saying yes to sex that you would rather say no to. Like, and that's so hard, especially as people who have been like enculturated as women. And we've been told that like sex is sort of like this currency of love that we have for our partners. Yeah. It is really difficult to get rid of that narrative. And I know that that's something that has stuck with me a lot. Like, I've had lots of sex. I have violated my body because I didn't want to have it. But I felt like, well, this is what a wife is supposed to do.
And if also, you love like, your man. I want to connect with you.
Right,
like,
exactly.
I felt that too, of like, well, I want to connect with him.
Right. But so, not thinking that there are other ways for us to connect and not having these really important conversations about like how we each view sex, you know? Because for me, like, yeah, I'll have sex with you. It's fun. Makes me feel close and connected to you. But there will be times where I would rather do something else with you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I will derive the same sort of emotional intimacy and availability through that than if we just have sex. Like, we're so limited in our ways and expression of like love even.
Yeah.
So being ace or being on the ace spectrum has allowed me to explore those things, to explore those nuances. And like, just, was it last night or a couple nights ago, me and my partner were talking about this, and something that I have been trying to do more that I've been really shy of doing because I don't want to put emphasis on the fact that like, we haven't had sex in a week, we haven't had sex in 3 days or whatever the fuck it is. I've been wanting to talk about it instead of like internalizing it and beating myself up about it. And so we talked and I was just like, you know, I just want to let you know that like, I noticed that we haven't been having sex lately. Cause like, I just launched a book and I'm fucking tired as shit. But I really want to have sex with you.
Yeah.
Like, I want to just make that known. I'm not in a place to do it right now, but I just want you to know that I see it, I notice it, and I want for us to be in this moment. And we were like sort of cuddling in bed, and I was like, I want you to know that this moment for me, I know it's not sex, but it feels like sex for me because we're connected. And, you know, I'm laying on your body and I can feel your heart beating in my ear. Like, that to me feels like intimacy.
Yeah.
And I thought that that was going to be an experience that I just shared solo. I thought like, you know, for him, he'd be like, that's cool, I'm really happy that you're having that experience. But like,
yeah,
I would love to have an orgasm with you sometime.
Right.
And he was like, actually, I have been able to access that with you in this moment as well. I would love to have sex with you more often, but I am also tired. I am chronically ill. It's sometimes difficult for me to want to have sex with you because maybe I'm tired or I have a headache or I'm stressed or I'd rather do something else. So we've been having a lot of conversations in our relationship about what are the other ways that we can be physically intimate and emotionally intimate with each other that doesn't look like penis, vagina, orgasm, you know?
Something just clicked for me too is I've been really ruminating lately on how so many cis men are disconnected from like their bodies and disconnected from in the moment with sex, and how I feel like I've been harmed by that by so many partners. And, you know, I think like definitely exposure to mainstream porn from young ages definitely has to do with that sexual trauma. But also I was just thinking about, I don't even think so many men realize, I was just thinking about how with what I was describing of saying yes to experiences I didn't want, I just started thinking of like how many men have probably done that so many times because of the pressure to be these hypersexual beings. And how actually Gray and I just last night, I've started checking in and going like, which is something we've never done before, of like, do you want a kiss right now? I'm feeling like, and you know, like, cause you can always, not always, but oftentimes you can sense your energy with the partner.
Sure. Yeah.
And, just being like, do you want a kiss right now? Do you want to make out right now? Like, you know, are you liking me touching you right now? And starting to go through that with him has been really liberating because I think so often men aren't asked that either.
No.
Do you actually want me to give you a blowjob right now or whatever? Like, are you actually into this?
And it's also okay if you say no.
Yeah. Exactly.
It doesn't like, it's not an indictment on your manhood or your masculinity or your sexual prowess if you say, actually, no, I'm not really feeling it.
Yes. And last night I was like, sort of checking in with him, and I was like, oh, I'm feeling turned on. Like, do you want to have sex right now? And he was like, no, I'm really tired, I want to go to bed. And it was like actually the first time where I have ever said to him, like, you don't ever have to do anything you don't want to.
Yeah.
You don't ever have to have sex if you don't want to. And he was like, thanks, that feels really good. And I just thought like, damn, I think that so many men haven't given themselves that space or been given that space with a partner either to be like, are you into this? Do you like this? You can say stop.
Yeah.
We can stop.
Again, the narrative is like men are sexual beings. They're visual creatures. They want to have sex all the time and they'll fuck anything that walks. But like that, there's a lot more nuances to their experiences. And I want the same kind of consideration for my sexuality to be given to these guys, you know, because they need it. They need to be soft.
I have a friend who... we recently had a conversation and he's cishet and he was like, we were talking about how he does not have the desire to have penetrative sex and how for a very long time he has lied about that because he does not feel like he can have that conversation with other men because he would be, they would give him a hard time, right?
Of course.
And then, so then he's exploring all these, like, I need to go to a doctor because something must be wrong. And it was like, no, like, you don't have to.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. I was in a session with a client recently and, you know, we'd worked together before a few years ago. And so we're working together again. And when we were working together the first time, she was like, I'm not having enough sex. I want to have more sex. When I was in college, I was banging dudes all the time. I was having one night stands. I was, you know, for me, I want to get back to that. And so our work together for the first round was just like, you know, having her think back to like, you know, the confidence that she felt in her body during that time and whatever, whatever. And we're working together now. And spoiler alert, she's on the ace spectrum. And we realized that, you know, she was trying to look at those experiences of, you know, what she says is like hypersexuality as like, that's the pinnacle. That's what we should all aim for. But when she was really honest with herself, she was like, I didn't really want to have sex with these people. Mm-hmm. I just felt that in order for me to be loved or seen or worthy or to be on the same wavelength with my friends, I had to have a lot of sex. And so it was really interesting for me to be in conversation with her about that because we were totally looking at this past self as being like, oh, I want to get back to that because that was the true nature of my sexuality. And she's realizing like, no, actually it wasn't. Like I was kind of like playing along with this script or the story that in order for me to be a healthy person, a desirable person, I have to have a lot of sex. And now she's gotten really clear that like, she doesn't want to have penetration. She doesn't enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And she's in a relationship with someone where she's vocalizing those needs. And it's really beautiful to watch her partner on the other side be like, cool, let's explore other things.
Yeah.
You know, like I want to be there for you. And that's not to say that like that everybody has to have that experience. Like it is well within your right to not date a person who is asexual. But my issue is saying that you will never date an ace person mm-hmm. without understanding that there are nuances to asexuality, just as there are nuances to sexuality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or that someone married to someone who, you know, discovers that they're asexual or that they, you know, don't enjoy having sex at all. Similarly to the monogamous assumption, right? Mm-hmm. We've kind of had this discussion on our podcast before because I'm interested in non-monogamy and someone was like, you know, how could you give your partner the ultimatum of you need to let me have a partner or else. I'm like, whoa. The monogamy is already like an assumed ultimatum right. that you are not going to have a relationship with anyone else or else.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, thinking about asexuality in relationships, sort of the assumption is you will give me sex or else this relate. And it's like, what if we flipped the script on that of like, actually, I do not owe sex to you
mm-hmm.
and you can find other ways to satisfy yourself or this relationship isn't going to work out rather right. than, you know, that being on the burden of the person who does not wish to have sex with the other person.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, we put a lot of importance on sex, you know, it's like the center of a romantic relationship. And to the extent where it's like, some would even say that that's what sort of discerns a platonic relationship from a romantic
yes,
one
yes.
is the sex. But I know lots of people who are friends and have fucking sex. You know what I'm saying? So like, I really want for us to just like think outside of the box a little bit mm-hmm. about like, what does it mean to be in relationship? Are there aspects of this relationship other than sex that you really enjoy? Yeah. Or is like, if you take everything else away, is sex still at the center, you know? And for a lot of people, we don't take the time to think about these things. Mm-hmm. No one's asking us these questions. So we have to ask ourselves.
Yeah. You know? Infidelity is often only defined by in terms of sex. Mm-hmm. We were just talking about this the other day because I was like, what about like when you have a crush on someone, we're talking about infidelity and I know I'm not going to breach the physical boundary. But what about all that other shit of talking on the phone for 5 or 6 hours? You know, we don't normally set those terms up. It's just like, you're not going to have sex with anyone else. You're not going to kiss anyone else. Okay, we're good. Mm-hmm. It's like, there's so many other nuances to relationships with people and intimate relationships with people that, I don't know, we don't think about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Highly recommend the book Ace. It's incredible. I think it will help even people who identify as highly sexual people because it'll ask them like, where does this come from? Am I highly sexual because like I actually want to have sex mm-hmm. or is that a narrative that I've bought into? that I need to be a respectable or desirable person, that means I have to have a lot of sex. Mm.
Oh, completely. Mm. I'm like, I was having this conversation with my mom the other day because I would have, you know, years ago would have definitely identified myself as highly sexual because I was supposed to wait to have sex until I got married. And I was already like under the cover of darkness.
Yeah.
You know, so I was like, oh my God, I'm already just like, this is so scandalous. And then once we got married, it was like, you know, I was like, it's happening. It's just constant. And I was just like, I'm just so highly sexual, you know, cut to a couple years in. And that's just not what was happening anymore. And I'm still beyond attracted physically to my husband. And I'm like realizing it was just like, oh no, I did that because that was what I thought I needed to do. Mm-hmm. So I made, quote unquote, made myself tell myself that I was highly sexual because that was the way that I could be a good partner and be loved and whatever. It's just like, no, it's just wasn't.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And instead of highly sexual, it might just be like you have hot, like, I don't know, that's not a good way of saying it. I was gonna say like high desire, like frequent, like desire for physical connection for people, but that's not a very catchy way of saying it. Highly sexual is a way easier to say that. But it's like, yeah, maybe some people want to have sex with a lot of people, different people, frequently, easily, quickly. But I don't necessarily think that that person is like more sexual than the person who enjoys having their once a month, like you said, their once a month, 7 hour romp with their husband. It's like,
seriously.
It's just different. And, and I guess that's what's important of all of this is like, it's just different.
So through the pandemic, you had the conscious uncoupling and then you came out as non-binary and then we're talking about being asexual and then you put out a book called Send Yourself. So, okay, I want to hear about the book. I also want to hear about like,
it's a beautiful book. By
it's
the way.
So broad. It is so beautiful.
And oh, thank you.
We'll have all the links. Happy. We'll have all the links for it in the episode notes. But I'm so curious if the past 2 years while writing this book, the time alone, coming out, talking about being asexual, like how that inspired this book and then is connected.
Yeah. I wrote this book when I was living apart from my partner.
Okay.
And I think that, I don't know. For me, it was really important. If I'm going to write a book about sensuality, like I can't just do it in a very unsensual way. So I was very happy that, you know, I had all this time alone and I really got connected to my body and myself and my own desires and needs because it allowed me to really channel all of that into the book. As well as, you know, we've been talking a lot about asexuality and sensuality is so much a part of my ace experience. Sensuality is so much a part of my sexual experience. Like I know that there are some people who are able to maybe just have sex and it's just about the physical, like let's get a nut and move on. But like I need to have my body considered in every aspect of a sexual experience. It's not just about having an orgasm. It's about like getting connected to my body through somebody else's body. And so sensuality is one of the main foundational pieces, I would say, of my sexuality. And that is to say that sensuality is not synonymous with sexuality. I think that there's a lot of talk that I've heard just as I've been writing this book and promoting it that people are like, oh yeah, sensuality is sexuality, right? Like we use that term interchangeably. And the way that I see sensuality is that it is just you having a private and personal experience with your own body. That it's possible for you to have that experience and have someone else gaze upon it or be inspired by it. But first and foremost, it's about the relationship that you have with your body. And, you know, one of the things that I was taught about sensuality, and I'm wondering what you two have been taught about sensuality, is that you, like the first image that comes to mind, and I really want to get rid of it, of a sensual person is Jessica Rabbit. Like idea of like the big tits and the slinky dress and the legs showing. You know, it's all about something that you are being. It's like maybe an aspect of performance that sensuality is performance. And I don't necessarily think that that's true, but I think that that definition or that understanding of sensuality has been really flattened. You know, this idea that sensuality is about what you buy. It's about the lingerie that you wear. It's about the candle that you smell. Like I, with this book, am asking for folks to explore sensuality on their own terms and to also explore for themselves my philosophy, which is that like you are a sensual being. It doesn't matter like what shit you have in your closet or like how much you spend on face care. Like if you have a body, you are sensual.
We have the senses.
Yes. And your job is meant to reclaim that part of yourself and to create space for that part of yourself to be shown outside of the gaze of like performance or hypersexualization that I think sensuality has gotten.
What was your definition of sensuality and like how
do you think very curious now? About that.
I would say it's probably similar to yours. Like my first image right away is this is has so many layers to it. Wow, now that I'm thinking about it, holy shit. Is Princess Leia in the in the movie where she's like all bound up in the bikini. So it's in a subservient position.
Interesting.
It's very like the small, you know, the especially back then that was such a scandalous and my parents would always make me fast forward that part and I couldn't see it. Even though
There was no sex happening.
There was no sex happening.
That's funny. My parents actually didn't, and I was pretty young.
Well, but it was okay. So I'm in a home where, my sexuality is assumed. Of course, she has to be straight. Mm-hmm. She could never be queer. But yet, they wouldn't let me look at a woman. It was very confusing. So it was like there was no. It was like there was this there was this understanding that like there's this woman who's in this like very small bikini and like but she can't even look at that and there's no sex and whatever, so because it was fast forwarded too, it was very like forbidden. Right. Yeah. So then I remember seeing it and like being like this is like the pinnacle of sensuality. And now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, oh my gosh, there's so many layers of the whole thing that she's like, she's bound, she's in a bikini. And now I'm thinking about like my personal and experience. Also, and I'm like, oh my God.
If I'm thinking about that scene correctly, that wasn't by her choice.
No.
Like she didn't get dressed up in that way because she was feeling herself.
She was kidnapped and put on display.
She was sexualized.
Yes.
She was kind of enslaved.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Yeah.
That's
when really actually she was quite a, now we're evaluating the movie,
she was quite a powerful.
But she was also very modest beforehand.
Very modest.
She was in a white.
Always
up just, to her throat yes. gown.
And that's powerful right. woman.
Mm-hmm. Yes, in control. And then having that stripped from her is
a... Wow, it's a lot of layers now.
So many layers. Wow.
Like, I'm thinking about some of my trauma and I'm like, oh my God. Like, that's the first image. It's all falling together now. Wow.
Yeah, what about you, Becca?
You know, I feel like I was not super familiar with the term sensuality.
Mm.
Growing up or even like in high school or thinking about being an adolescent, I didn't think much about sensuality, probably because it wasn't as an exciting and taboo term as sexuality.
That's right, yeah.
So I don't think I ever considered it much growing up or had a definition of it. But now when I think about it, like when I have become more familiar with the term, it's different from sexuality in my mind because sensuality, I think of it like, and maybe this is something that I saw on the internet. Of course, everything's influenced by something, but like a really like juicy peach. And I think about it like dripping. And I think of this being, I think of sensual almost as the sexual gratification that doesn't come from sex, if that makes sense.
Oh, that's pretty much it. Yeah.
So, you know, like how we were looking at the shiny, oily.
Oh, yeah.
There's these like illustrations we were talking about on the show where it's like the bodies are like, they're like illustrations, but it's like everything is stretched and the breasts are so big and everything's like oily and it has this, everything has this shiny, almost latexy texture.
And I love looking
that
at it.
That to me is like sensual. It's like, do not look at it that and I'm like, I want to fuck that. No, it's like it gives me this feeling inside that pleasure. Yes. Exactly, pleasurable. So that's sort of how I think of sensual, or I think of, you know, I don't know, something really delicious or just somebody massaging me in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And it has nothing to do with my genitals or wanting to have sex with anyone or masturbate. It's just like gives me that feeling of like, oh,
that, yeah.
that's Like, nice. Ooh, like when you use that head thing, you know, that's a sensual experience.
Where because you're being invited to be in your body. Like that's what it feels like to be like. I was doing workshops all last week where I was inviting people. One of the things that I say in my workshops is that, you know, like you are a sensual being, even as you are listening to me speak to you, and I'm going to prove it. So I'll have them go through this exercise where they're literally lighting up every one of their senses, not in a sexual way, but just like, what are you smelling in this moment? What are you seeing? Connect to your breath, et cetera. And I'll pull everyone and ask them at the end, like, how are you feeling in your body? And they're like, I feel buzzy. I feel like I'm fully in my body. I feel warm. I feel tingly. I feel connected. And I'm like, that is exactly what it means to be sensual. You're fully in your body. All of your senses are aroused or awake. And you are really in union with yourself. And like, I fucking love that feeling. Like that feeling feels so good. And not only is that feeling derived from pleasure, it also helps us to feel a sense of power in our bodies, you know? Because I know that when I feel that, like, you can't tell me nothing. Yeah. Like, I am like at the top of the world. I can do fucking anything. And so being sensual and cultivating our sensual selves isn't just about like, let's explore pleasure. It's also about like, how can I stand in my own truth? And like, how can I hold space for my power and the ways that I can like take up space in this world, you know?
And it's like expression, right? Like, I'm just thinking of like things that make feel that way. I'm like mozzarella sticks for me are sensual. I think of biting into it and I'm just like, And what's so cool about that is that that's just for me, right? Yes, and sometimes sexuality doesn't feel that way where it's like, oh, it's just for me. But sensuality, for some reason, does that inherently feels like, oh, that's just for me.
Yeah,
that's
it's
just
like about like my experience. Private experience. Like no one can take that away from you. No one can, like you can't even really describe it with words because it's a very personal, visceral feeling that you have in your body, you know?
Yes.
Oh, it's so interesting. I'm thinking now too. I'm like, oh my God, and I feel like so much sensuality whenever I'm like, I'm in my robe, I cross my legs in front of the mirror and I put makeup on. It's like, that's like my moment is when I'm putting like this to feel it going on and just watching. And then I just will stay home. But it's just feeling it like go on and sitting, feeling my legs cross together in the warmth of my robe.
Yes.
And oh, man, it's just the best. And I feel like you were saying, you're like, no one can tell me no. I'm like, I'm on top of the world right now. Like it's just, there's just this.
Yeah. And also, you know, the other aspect of sensuality that I try to talk about, too, is that it's not just about the five senses. It's also about like what we're experiencing in our emotional bodies, you know. As I was saying earlier, I do this workshop where I'm having people go through each of their senses to sort of awaken them. And in that process, I'm also asking them, like, what emotions are coming up in your body right now? Do those emotions have physical sensations or are they just feelings that you have, you know? Also thinking about like what sort of thoughts are coming up in your head, because our heads are a part of our bodies. You know, I think sometimes we forget that, like, you know, at least for me, I think a lot about the head as being like the ruler, the computer, and the body is just here for the ride. But it's like we're all sort of holistically one thing. So I'm always inviting for people to think not just about like what they are experiencing like tactilely, but also what emotions are coming up for them? And like, is there a way, can you hold space for what's coming up for yourself without abandoning yourself? You know, that to me is what it means to be sensual. And sometimes it's not fun. You know, I know that we're talking about sensuality in these like really yummy terms of like mozzarella sticks and putting on makeup and stuff like that. But sometimes in order to ground into your body, you have to be confronted with some things that just aren't pleasant.
Discomfort,
pain, anxiety, grief, you know? And I want to make it clear that, you know, sensuality isn't just about feeling pleasure. It's just about feeling.
It's about being alive is from this definition.
Yes.
So the experience of living and being present in your consciousness is kind of what I'm hearing.
So yeah, I wrote this book to help people get into their sensual bodies. And it was really important for me to write a book about sensuality and to not have it be just theory. Like, I didn't want to have like 10 chapters where I'm like, this is what sensuality is. Like, I want for people to experience sensuality with their own bodies. And I want it to like be something that they practice and something that they define on their own terms. And so it's a guided journal that you get to write in and lots of questions and exercises for me. That's like telling you all like, okay, let's check in with your body today. What are you feeling? You know?
I was so excited when you sent it over to us. And I was like, I was so excited to read the book. And then I opened it. I got even more excited. I'm like, oh my God, like, just, I love the piece that it's interactive. And also, by the way, we were saying the art and everything is so beautiful.
It's also like digestible, right? Where it's like, I like the idea that you can just take a moment, like you were saying, an hour, 15 minutes, like at night after your kids go to bed, whatever. Just take a little moment to be with yourself, to ask yourself these questions, take a little moment to write. And it's just a very attainable piece of time that you can hold for yourself and your body.
Yeah, that was really important to me too. You know, I think we talk a lot about like, what are the practices that'll make you feel connected to yourself? And that's cool, but it's a lot easier if you have like something that's like, this book's whole purpose is for you to explore it. Like, not to just like read it and put it on your nightstand and like never look at it again. Like, this book is a built-in practice of connecting to your sensual body. And that is kind of like, I feel like the barrier of entry with that is really low. Like, there's not like high stakes with it. You can just pick it up, write a couple of words down and move on with your day. But even that is very powerful.
Right.
You know, I think sometimes we think that practices have to be long and, you know, very elaborate. But I mean, just sitting down and asking yourself, where is my breath located in my body right now? And just taking a moment to feel where, like, the sensation of breath, whether it's in your chest or in your belly, and just noticing. Like, that is a practice. That is a practice of coming home to yourself.
I love it. It's like powerful stuff.
It's like the way to have an interruption, like we were talking
about earlier. Yeah, disrupt it. Yes. Disrupt the system.
Disrupt
that's,
with this.
That's the other thing too. You know, a lot of us are walking around not connected to our bodies, and we have very good reason to. You know, we're traumatized. We're in a fucking pandemic.
Yeah.
We're constantly moving fast, and this practice is about getting us to slow down and come back into ourselves in a world that's telling us that we are better and more productive when we are doing for others and not taking that time for ourselves. So I've been kind of telling people, like, not only is it like a sensuality journal, it's also a giant fuck you to the man, because like, the man is always telling us to keep moving, to keep going, to be productive, to consume. And this book is like, no, just like be with yourself. Yeah.
I love it. Beautiful. I'm so excited to go through
it. I know, me too.
Yeah, let me know how you like it.
I cannot wait. And Broads, all this info will be in the episode notes. Also, amazing to get for yourself and for a friend.
Yeah.
Or a family member. Like, this is...
Or for the men in your life. Yes. Men need sensuality.
I was actually thinking that, going through this. I'm going to make my boyfriend do this with me.
Yes.
It's so important.
Also, your podcast.
Yeah, plug away,
self.
Please.
Yes, please. Yes.
Plug your things.
Plug.
Yes. So my book is called Sensual Self. You can find that wherever you find books. I would like to mention that independent bookstores are great. So if you can find it at an indie bookstore, that's even better. I have a podcast. It used to be called The Sexually Liberated Woman.
Yes.
But since I came out as non-binary, that word didn't really resonate with me. So it's now called Sensual Self. My podcast can be found anywhere you listen to podcasts. And I've been plugging my newsletter lately, because I've been trying to divest a little bit from the Instagram bullshit.
Love that.
I'm like, I want to have like real interactions with people that aren't dictated by an algorithm. I'm really, really wanting that. So folks can sign up to my newsletter. It's free at evionwhitney.com/subscribe. Yeah,
I think that's it. Amazing. Thank you so much, Evion, for coming back.
Yes.
It was so nice.
Great. Thank you for having me. It's always so good to chat with you guys.
Yeah.
We so appreciate you. And we'll chat soon, Broads.
Chat soon.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.